tuned in to Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network.
Welcome to the Village Vision Podcast, where community, collaboration, and care converge. I'm Dr. Crystal Morrison, and I'm honored to be your host on this incredible journey. As a firm believer in the power of a united village, I'm thrilled to bring you inspiring stories, research, and projects that break down barriers in child and family care. Through heartfelt conversations with experts, advocates, and those with lived experiences, we'll showcase the transformative impact of collective support. So join me on the Village Vision Podcast as we explore the remarkable collaborations that lead to better outcomes, foster a sense of community, and inspire action to improve care for ourselves and everyone around us. On today's episode, I'm here with myself, and I'm taking on a very difficult topic that deserves the full attention of our community, intense collaborations among systems, and enduring care and support for millions of victims that unfortunately will never receive justice. Today's episode demands our courage and our empathy as we delve into a story marked by racial injustice within the criminal justice system. A young Black woman's harrowing experience of rape by an affluent, middle-aged white man, and the subsequent battle for justice in a system that is steeped in bias. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't call out potential triggering moments, a trigger warning here in this episode. This episode contains discussion of rape and racial injustice, so I really encourage you to listen with care and prioritize your mental and emotional well-being as you listen. Now, first, there are some very important key points regarding this topic and the story. Something that I have never shared publicly before is that I am a victim of rape myself, not once, but twice. I never reported the crimes because I absolutely feared retaliation, shame for others, and quite frankly, just not being believed by the justice system. In this story that I'm going to share, the names and the identifying information regarding the victim, the rapist, and other key players in this story will never be shared. The location, however, will be shared. The location in this story is the city of Pittsburgh and Allegheny County in western Pennsylvania. I live here. I love this city, and it's become my home and the city that I've chosen to raise my children in. Now, despite frequently being cited as one of the most livable cities in the United States, Pittsburgh is repeatedly ranked as one of the worst cities in the country for Black women, citing unemployment rates, high poverty rates, birth defect rates, death rates, including death by homicide, among other things. So Pittsburgh, I want you to face the facts about very important aspects of the city and unfortunately aspects that we live on a daily basis in the rest of this country. Now, the story of a young Black woman being assaulted by a privileged white man is tragically a familiar tale, echoing throughout our history and persistently affecting our present. In 2022, a young Black woman, whom I'm going to refer to as Nora, was raped by a middle-aged white man who we will call John. Now, out of fear, Nora did not report the incident initially. In the weeks following the crime, Nora experienced deep depression and withdrew from everyone around her. Fearing that she was pregnant, Nora took excessive prescription and over-the-counter medication in an attempt to take her life on multiple occasions. Now, after a loved one discovered these suicide attempts, Nora confided in a trusted friend, another Black woman, about what had happened. The police were called and an investigation began. Now, Nora, as I hope you can imagine, was initially terrified about naming her rapist, but she stood firm And she repeatedly shared the excruciating details of the crime with detectives, shared these details in a forensic interview, and later multiple times with the district attorneys in the preliminary hearing and also in front of a jury at trial. Nora endured a humiliating forensic exam. And very specific items that Nora shared with the police that were part of the crime itself were actually seized in the search of John's home. It's a very thorough investigation. And now let's fast forward to the jury trial. As I said, Nora bravely shared her story in front of the jury and the judge. John shared his version. Various others testified, attorneys cross-examined, evidence was presented, and reasonable doubt was stoked. John's character witnesses cast him as a smart, upstanding citizen. John's expensive defense attorney masterfully victim-shamed and used Nora's suicide attempts as someone who's just stealing drugs and caught in a lie. John talked at length about his professional accomplishments and cried on the stand at appropriately choreographed times. Nora stood firm, stated her truth, and did not shed any tears. Now, after days of testimony, followed by closing arguments, jury deliberation began. Now, let's talk a little bit about the jury. Now, the term jury of your peers is something we've heard time and time again. And that term, jury of your peers, means that an individual charged with a crime is entitled to a trial by a group of impartial people from their community. Now, John certainly got a jury of his peers in terms of race. But the impartiality goes out the window, doesn't it? The jury consisted of 8 white men, 3 white women, and 1 black woman. The jury selected a single black woman as foreperson. And armed with a handful of Kleenexes, she cried through the verdict and painfully delivered not guilty on all 8 felony charges to an affluent white man. I'm sure a traumatic experience for her as well. Now, if you're listening, please let this scene sit. Let this scene weigh on you. The single person on the jury that looked like the victim, Nora, she cried through the verdict that was made by a jury made up of people that looked like the criminal. And Nora had to hear from the one person that looks like her, that she just wasn't believed as much as the white guy with the expensive attorney. Now, if you're wondering how I know these things, it's because I happen to be in the room and I witnessed the verdict delivered firsthand. So I'm not creating this image from interviews or secondhand accounts. The room was packed, including a large contingent of law enforcement officers that were present to keep the court in order during the verdict announcement. The air was heavy, almost suffocating, and time seemed suspended. The foreperson's words cracked in her throat as she tried to compose herself and repeat, "Not guilty," 8 times. She, in fact, even had to pause for some time midway through the verdict to avoid breaking down herself. Flanked by family, Nora sat behind the assistant district attorney and the detective. She sat stoically, tears welling in her eyes, but never quite overflowing her lids. She did not want to be touched. While she had held her head high throughout this entire ordeal, she dropped her head for the very first time leaving the courtroom that day. Now, make no doubt, the jury's decision in this case was influenced by entrenched bias favoring the testimony of the white man John, over that of the Black woman, Nora. The actual truth, the actual evidence, became irrelevant. Their verdict was a reflection of systemic racism and prejudice that has been ingrained through generations and continues to plague us today. And I've talked with a few people who are familiar with this case, and without a doubt, every single person has said that if John had been a Black man, there would have been a guilty verdict. Or if Nora had been a young white woman, there would have been a guilty verdict. This is not just my perspective on this matter, I can assure you. To date, Nora doesn't talk about what happened or the verdict. But based on the limited things that she said, I believe that she once had a sliver of trust in the justice system. I believe that she thought her truth would be believed, and she believed that she was doing the right thing by standing up. In fact, she still carries a post-it note that says, "I know my truth." Whatever trust Nora had in the justice system is now firmly gone. And I think she feels a bit naive for believing that the truth of a Black woman would weigh heavier than the words of a white man. Would Nora go through it all over again? I honestly don't know. And would Nora encourage others to report their rapist? I honestly don't know that answer either. Nora and her family do want to acknowledge some of the heroes and supporters throughout this short story I've shared today, because there are some. From the very beginning, the lead detective from the Pittsburgh Police Department demonstrated the utmost support, compassion, and professionalism. The Allegheny County Assistant District Attorneys and the advocate from Center for Victims were also exceptional professionals with deep compassion and training. They never doubted Nora's truth. And independent of the verdict, Nora and her family are deeply grateful for their unwavering support. Now, as I was thinking about this story, I read or reread one of my favorite books, Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. And I remember reading it as a young girl and being appalled by the guilty verdict that was delivered against a Black man, Tom Robinson. I remember the unfairness and the helplessness of Atticus Finch's words in our courts. When it's a white man's word against a Black man, the white man always wins. They're ugly, but those are the facts of life. Now, even though I grew up in the rural South, I really believed that I was living in a better, more progressive time than Jim and Scout Finch had in the 1930s in Alabama. Rereading that book now and being an adult in 2024, I'm not so sure that much has really changed, although I desperately hope it would. The why is always part of this podcast. Why did I want to share this story? Well, first and foremost, I want to shed the light on the deeply ingrained inequalities that continue to plague our society. Sometimes it's easy to pretend like we're so progressive and that they don't exist, but let's get real. They do. Second, if I have any voice as a privileged white woman, I want to use it. And third, I honestly don't know what to do or how to create real action or how to really lock arms with other victims to share our truth. Now, if you're listening, I hope that Nora's story touches you. In fact, I hope it fundamentally alters the way you see the world around you and the way you view our justice system. I hope that you will reach out if you or others you know are pushing for critical change in this area, because I know I'm looking for answers too. Thank you for your patience today as I've shared this story that's not mine, but a story from someone that I want to protect and honor while hoping for change at the same time. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Village Vision Podcast. I hope you found inspiration and valuable insight from our conversations today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, rate, leave a review, and share. Thank you for being a part of the Village Vision Podcast on Word of Mom Radio. Take care, and let's keep shining a light on the power of community, collaboration, and care. She is sure. She is strong. She is true.